Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to our continuing Indiana Mania as we cover all four indie movies on this week's episodes. In the red corner, we named the dog Indiana. Sean Connery joins the Indiana Jones universe as Henry Jones Sr. Salah is back, and so are those bloody Nazis, as Indy is on a globe-trotting quest to find the Holy Grail in 1989's The Last Crusade.
We're about to complete a great quest. The Holy Grail, Dr. Jones.
Oh, rats.
This is it. The shield is the second marker. We found it.
Indiana Jones is on the quest of a lifetime. But for some adventures, one Jones is not enough.
Dad? Junior?
Don't call me that, please.
Follow me! I know the way!
While in the blue corner, we told you we were going there. Is it time for a reappraisal of those CGI gophers, ancient aliens, and Kate Blanchett's accent? Or has this movie forever nuked the fridge? From 2008, we finally arrived at Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Legend says that a crystal skull was stolen from a mythical lost city in the Amazon, supposedly built out of solid gold,
guarded by the living dead.
Whoever returns the skull to the city temple will be given control over its power.
You will help us find it.
The Indiana Mania continues right now. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Butters. Germany has declared war on the Jones boys. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
How are you both?
Excellent.
Excellent. Great.
Yeah, really well.
Yeah. Another pastel number.
Really?
Yeah.
This isn't pastel.
What is it then?
Red and white.
Which together make?
Pink.
Oh, hello. And Chris, are we officially sponsored by Pixar?
No, I'm just wearing a Pixar t-shirt.
You look really nice, actually. And you're wearing shorts as well, which is something I will never do.
Yes, I'm nearing actually maybe wearing flip-flops.
Please,
so I can chuck them off and have my feet out for next week's show, maybe.
I know it's making you uncomfortable, but I'm so happy in my sandals.
We could both be barefoot.
We should touch feet and see what happens to him.
Explode.
Don't combust. Touch the feet. It's like, don't cross the streams. The thing is, you wearing shorts, because I'm not a fan of shorts, but you wearing shorts actually is not a problem for me because you have such thick hair.
Yeah.
It actually looks like furry trousers.
Yeah. That's how we work.
Mm.
We talk about the monkeys on Thursday.
Are you excited about this week's shows?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're going to ditch the connection section this week. I will say, just to fill you in, if you're only just joining us, this week it is Crusade and Kingdom joining the fight for the title of the greatest Indiana Jones movie of all time. We will have a champion on Thursday. Big day for the show on Thursday. Big day, declaring the greatest Indiana Jones movie ever. Big day for Indy as well. Now, I've always wanted to know, factually, which is the best Indiana Jones movie. And I'm so pleased that it's us that are going to be getting to announce that.
Yeah, I think Stephen, George and Harrison are all excited to hear the verdict.
Yep, absolutely. So, Chris, you did ask for something on Twitter, because we're not doing guesses. No need to do guesses. No guesses. But you did ask for something on Twitter. We are at ClashPod on Twitter. We are also at Instagram on Twitter. No, at ClashPod on Instagram.
Yeah, I asked our lovely listeners and followers what their favourite indie movie was and if they had any special memories of watching them.
So I'll do the ones for... I'll start the Last Crusade ones. This is from Ryan D. It has to be Last Crusade. That is the best indie movie. Connery and Ford on screen together were fantastic. I was 7 years old when I first saw it on VHS and I loved it. Made me fall in love with Indiana Jones and Spielberg. It just pips Raiders because of Connery.
This is from Peter Mahoney. I think The Last Crusade is my favourite. I think it has the best action and the most interesting story. Meeting the knight at the end and having to make that choice is brilliant.
Marion sent us a lovely long email. I've just pulled out one anecdote that I liked particularly. She says, I remember on the way to watch the film, this anecdote happens. I remember stopping by some sort of antique shop before the cinema and the man who was working there, hearing we were going to see the latest Indiana Jones, pulled a hat almost identical and a whip from a side shelf and started to imitate my then and now hero.
Did you have sex with him?
I think she might have been a child.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
I'm not sure, Marion, but I just wanted to put that out there.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Nice, V. Nice.
Lower the tone.
Jesus. Paul Logue says, Last Crusade for me. First one gave me the heebie-jeebies for at least a year with the melting faces up there with Superman 3's Robot Woman. How do you feel about that, Chris?
Nothing's as bad as that.
Robert Farley says, it has to be Crusade for the fake-out opening with the inspirational legend that is Fedora, an introduction to Indy's idiosyncrasies, the globe-trotting fun, and heartfelt deconstruction of the father slash son relationship in one fantastic film. What did I get from it? True class and illumination. Boom. Normally, I don't like it when people ask themselves questions, but I liked that.
Yes, I think that's our... I mean, he's done our job for us. That's
yes,
better than what we're going to say in the next hour.
Yeah, that's true.
And finally, this comes from Gary. Crusade is one of my earliest cinema memories, so holds a special place for me, and I honestly think it's a near-perfect film. Like every week, though, I can't wait for the three of you to point out all the terrible things I've missed.
Oh. Victoria.
What?
That's you. Right.
It's in my notes, sorry.
Of course you do. So... let's crack on then. On Thursday, I'll be swinging through the jungle into the kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which means today Chris is seeing if he chose poorly with The Last Crusade. Chris takes on a journey.
In an effort to distance themselves from the darkness of Temple of Doom, Steven Spielberg and George Lucas concocted a much lighter story in which Indiana Jones searches for the Holy Grail. He starts by desecrating the corpse of a knight and burning his tomb, killing thousands of innocent rodents in the process. Our hero then kills several men who had dedicated their lives to protecting the Grail, sleeps with his father's girlfriend, asks Adolf Hitler for an autograph, gets his dad shot, steals some crockery, and destroys an old man's house. Indiana Jones then rides off into the sunset. See what I've done there?
I see what you did there, yeah. I also saw the minute where you mentioned rodent deaths, Victoria rolled her fucking eyes. She's like, oh, God, whatever. Set Alex off. Poor animals.
We'll get to that. But first, rather than describe my memory, I'm going to read out another listener's, if that's okay with you guys. I loved seeing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade at the cinema. I can remember waiting in the foyer and there were posters and cardboard cutouts of the film everywhere, which really added to the anticipation. I also remember needing the loo but holding it in as the film was so awesome and being scared shitless when the slick Nazi professor gets really old and disintegrates. He chose poorly, but that day me and my brother didn't. And that memory comes from Peter Tilly. My brother.
Oh.
Because we watched it together in 1989. So his memory is my memory as well.
That's lovely. Oh,
so nice.
So for me, it's up there with E.T., Batman and Jurassic Park as my favourite ever cinema trip.
Like a hive mind, you and your brother. Like the aliens at the end of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. They're a hive mind.
How about you two, Vicky?
I don't remember. I don't think I went to the cinema to see it. I know it's the one I've seen second most after Temple. I've just got nothing but good memories of it. I think my dad really liked it, like a proper family favourite. And there is no feeling for me like sitting down to watch this film. Like, it's just my comfiest watch, cozy. I really love it.
Alex, top four cinema trips for you as well, like me?
100%, yeah. Yes. I remember going to the cinema to see, this is the first Indiana Jones movie that I saw at the cinema, obviously. I was taking myself back to it. I don't remember exactly where I was. I was sitting on the, probably about four rows back at the Odeon in Leeds next to my friend James Jolly, and just giddy with excitement in a way that you have as a child that you don't have. The minute you start watching films with a slightly adult eye, with a critical eye, this takes me back to that cinema trip when I was just over the moon, just shoveling popcorn down my face, just going, I cannot wait for this to start. I'd seen the trailer, and I remember in the trailer, the bit where he goes, some adventures are too big for just one Jones, and going, what the fuck? There are two of them? And being so excited by that. It was genuinely one of the most wonderful experiences I've ever had in a cinema watching this movie. I also had the Commodore Amiga game, which was shit, but I loved it because I was controlling Indiana Jones. Big film for me.
He's all about control, isn't he, Alex?
I mean, the movie's all right, but I can control it.
Right, let's talk about the making of Last Crusade. It has maybe the most complicated history of any indie film, but I'm going to keep it brief.
How? It's insane. I was so pleased that you ended up doing this because I looked through the Wikipedia page and went, holy shit, what?
I have read the Chris Columbus script. I think I'm going to focus on that because I think that's the most fun way of approaching this. But it begins with George Lucas wanting to do a haunted house movie with Indiana Jones and hiring Romancing the Stone writer Diane Thomas to pen the script. How would you feel about a haunted house indie?
Would be over the moon. I mean, the castle is a haunted house, no?
Yes.
Yes.
Did we not... Was this not already discussed for a previous movie where Spielberg poo-pooed it? I think on Temple, wasn't he talking about a haunted castle in Scotland?
Yes. He said no because he'd just done Poltergeist, which obviously he didn't direct. Mm-hmm. Or did he?
No,
he didn't.
Toby Hooper directed.
All right. Or did he?
Very good.
So Lucas had brought this up again, and then he suggested a Holy Grail story, but Spielberg didn't think that was strong enough. So George says, let me put the haunted castle up front and then go on to the Grail. He wrote a treatment followed by an outline entitled Indiana Jones and the Monkey King.
Sorry. That's shite. I don't want to see that.
It's a difficult title to pull off, even for indie.
I don't mind it.
Really?
Indiana Jones and the Haunted Castle, yes. Indiana Jones and the Castle of Terror, yes. Mm-hmm. Monkey King, no.
Well, he hired Chris Columbus, writer of Gremlins, Goonies and Young Sherlock Holmes at the time, to turn it into a script called Indiana Jones and the Garden of Life. So I've read that and it's quite deranged. It's quite different as well to Last Crusade, but elements of it do end up in both Indy 3 and Indy 4. And I think some of it might even end up in Indy 5, which is shooting as we record this.
That's right.
In a castle.
Without Spielberg, though.
Well, I think he's there, but he's producing rather than directing. Mm. I think he'll be sitting on James Mangold's shoulder like George Lucas sits on his shoulder.
Do you?
Yeah.
A triple decker, Lucas and Spielberg. Well, Lucas won't be there though, will he? Or will he?
I think they're doing this without him. I mean, we'll see. And stuff might have been revealed by the time this goes out, but I feel like this is sort of being kept away from him like Star Wars was.
I know, because he's very vocal about things not going in the direction that he's probably sort of there waving, just locked at the other side of a fence, waving his version of the script guide. But no, midichlorians.
I'll talk about the bits that ended up in part four on Thursday, but these are some of my favourite elements from the Chris Columbus script. So Indy travels to Africa and teams up with a beautiful zoologist and a 200-year-old pygmy to find Su Wukong, the stone monkey king. The 21-year-old teaching assistant that he's shagging follows them on this adventure, but only after she...
Victoria's face.
It gets worse. Only after she tries to hang herself with his whip when he's saying he's going to leave without her.
Wow.
That's played for laughs in the script.
Really?
And it's quite horrific when I was reading it, to be honest. To be fair, this zoologist, who's closer to his age, calls him out on the age difference because the girl does follow him on the trip, refers to him as a very disturbed man because of it. And she actually never hooks up with him, even though he tries all the way through the film. So this is the one indie where he wouldn't have got the girl.
Right.
Remember the mechanical arm that Tote was supposed to have in Raiders? Yeah. Well, a Nazi gets it here. It's a machine gun early in proceedings and it fires electrical current later on.
Cool.
And because they seem to keep reusing elements from scripts that weren't used in those films, I wouldn't be surprised to see that in Indy 5 because it keeps coming back.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be happy with it in Indy 5. I think it's a solid idea.
Yep.
And I can't believe Lucas said to Spielberg for number one, he was like, no, Stephen, it's a very different kind of movie. Aliens. Now, here's an idea.
Interdimensional beings.
Sorry, yeah.
Elsewhere, Indy runs from a giant rolling bell. He uses his whip to water ski. He holds onto the back of the boat.
I thought you meant under his feet.
why would you think that?
I don't know.
What part of water skiing lends itself to a whip? It's the bit that attaches you to the boat.
Yeah, I see that now.
Yeah. You should see that then, though. Like, immediately, you should see that. That's hilarious. Also, I've got horrible, horrible Die Another Day images in my head.
Yeah. He fights against, then teams up with some pirates. He hides in some graves alongside skeletons to escape some stampeding wildebeest. He rides a rhino. he's nearly drawn and quartered by some buffalo.
He's tied to
a couple of buffalo and they're gonna take off his arms and legs.
That's fun.
Sorry, I thought you meant he was captured by buffalo who were then gonna use other animals to hang drawn.
I'm getting to that. Right. He gets attacked by gorillas who take his clothes and whip and start mimicking him. These same gorillas dress up in Nazi uniforms and drive a tank. I sent you that. I sent you that line from the script. Indy also gets shot and dies. At the end of the film, but a magical peach brings him back to life.
But a magical what?
Peach.
A peach? Because it's the Garden of Eden. Where are we?
We are in...
The Garden of Life.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll discuss that peach later on, because that does kind of end up in Last Crusade. It's just not a peach.
Yep.
I can't get over gorilla stealing his hat and whip and doing an impression
Ripping
of him.
Ripping the piss out of him. Sarcastic gorillas. So that specific story was eventually abandoned.
Was it?
It seems mainly because African tribes people are treated quite clumsily there, and Temple of Doom had just come out with
just
all that cultural insensitivity. And so they were taking something of a battering at the time. So they dropped it. So back to the drawing board. Steven Spielberg wanted to introduce Indy's father and flesh out that relationship to find out who inspired him and try and make it more of a character study. George didn't know how that would work with the Grail, and Spielberg said the search for the father is the search for the Grail.
Of course.
And that got them on track for what we saw in 1989 with Inner Space writer Jeffrey Boehm penning the final script and playwright Tom Stoppard doing an uncredited rewrite.
Told you. Jeffrey Boehm, Inner Space, 5-star movie. Brilliant. Great writer.
Was he annoyed about Inner Space?
I'm annoyed that I don't want to dredge it up, but I did say on the show when we were talking about Inner Space, it's a 5-star movie. And then afterwards, when we were in the pub, Victoria went, "Are you going to edit that bit out? Because otherwise I'll feel really sorry for you."
Is that what I said?
That's what you said. That's what you said. So that's if I'm annoyed, it's more about that.
You're both idiots.
It was like 8 months ago.
In terms of casting, they decided there was only one person who could play his father, and that was the father of Indiana Jones, James Bond. And with Sean Connery on board, they changed the character from a more conservative Yoda-like mentor figure into someone who is a match for his son. As Connery so modestly put it, anything Indy does, I have done better.
Already, yeah, he's like, I've already done it and better.
Classic Connery.
But that said, he's very gracious in the film because he does play second fiddle for the first time, I think, in his film career to another action hero.
Yeah, and I think it's respect to both of them because as well, Ford isn't afraid to make himself look really stupid in the presence of his dad. Like, he really is sort of undermining his heroic character all the way through, but I think they both embrace it. And then it was Lucas who suggested starting the film with Indiana Jones as a boy. And Harrison Ford is the person who put forward River Phoenix because he said he's the actor who looks the most like me when I was that age.
Okay.
Which is what you would say.
Well,
that really beautiful boy.
One of the most beautiful actors in Hollywood.
He's the spit of me.
There are no photos of me at that age, but I swear down that I looked just like him.
I mean, Ford's no Munter, though.
No, he's not.
And that's a very potted history of the film.
Munter.
It's like in between us, isn't it? We're back in time.
It's because he's got shorts on.
Any more? Any more?
No.
No, I'm good. Thank you. That was brilliant.
Let's do the movie then.
Right.
So I divided it up into geography, into the places they visit. We start in Utah. The Paramount logo turns into a rock in Utah in 1912. Do you approve of that one, Alex?
If I'm perfectly honest, it's my weakest, which surprised me. I don't think it's very good. It's just a mountain that looks a bit like the Paramount logo, and we already saw it done better in Raiders. So no, this is, weirdly, considering this is a great film, it's my least favourite logo transition. How about you guys?
I genuinely...
Do I have to have an opinion on
this? No, I mean, it really genuinely doesn't matter. And I'm already regretting asking you.
Why did you? You knew I would have an opinion on it.
We meet fake Indy before we meet real Indy.
So good.
He's simply called Fedora in the script, and he finds a cross. And then we meet real Indy, who is a child played by River Phoenix, who finds him and goes to work. And he is a lot like Harrison Ford here.
Yeah, he's doing a Harrison Ford impression. But
quite a good one.
Yeah,
it's a good one. It was making me feel like I was watching young Indiana Jones because I didn't think he looked like him, unlike Harrison, but I felt like I was in the presence of him.
Yeah.
He played Harrison Ford's son in Mosquito Coast.
Right.
And he said that he'd sort of studied him in his traits and felt like he knew him. So, yeah, there's a chase on a circus train.
So good.
He ends up in a serpent cart and he screams like Harrison Ford and he becomes traumatized. Yep. So we're sneaking that in. He ends up in the lion cart, grabs a whip, cuts his chin with the whip. We got the whip, we got the scar. He goes into a magic cart. That's not connected to anything. But he tricks himself out of the train and runs away. And then we hear Sean Connery, but we don't see him. He's investigating the Grail, even at this point. And what does he say? He says, "May he whom illuminated this illuminate me." Which, unless you're taking notes, we're going to come back to that later, but it's good. Also, we meet the villainous.
There's a lot of setup and payoff in this movie.
Okay.
It's very good.
Yeah, I wouldn't have spotted this. I wasn't making notes.
Okay.
And then we meet the villainous Panama Hat, who gets the cross.
Yeah. Now, does anyone else have a note here that if they hadn't killed Belloc in Raiders, this would have been so fantastic if it was Belloc?
Yeah, it makes you miss him.
Mm. But Belloc is the same age as him, isn't he?
Oh,
yeah.
So it wouldn't quite have worked. But, you know, I agree. There would have been a way. It's been a lovely place to connect them up, which is what I wanted because I told you I didn't want Belloc to die. Mm. And Fedora says to him, "You lost today, kid, but that doesn't mean you have to like it."
Get used to it, in fact.
Which is a lovely line. And then we cut to grown-up Indy. And I think... go on.
One of the biggest goosebumps. Remember, I watched them all in a row. I have watched them again because... because beer on number two was not a smart move. This was on the first watch, so a little bit of beer may have had a pronounced effect on me. But I remember having absolute goosebumps and scrawling in my notes. This was the biggest moment so far when River Phoenix's hat goes down and it raises again and it's Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, it's so beautiful.
But in terms of that childhood sequence, I feel like I've got to give some credit to Lucas here because he's the one who wanted it in there. And I do believe he ruined a lot of Star Wars backstory with those prequels, but I think he got it just right here.
Yes.
In terms of giving us this backstory, filling in these blanks that didn't need filling in. But I think it was just the right amount where it didn't sort of spoil anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we're in Portugal. It's 1938. We're on a boat. Panama hat is there.
I guess you could have it as Belloc now. Forget the earlier guy. Yeah. This could be the Belloc moment.
Yeah.
Mate, we aren't getting Belloc.
All right.
Sorry.
And I like the fact that they're fighting over the same cross, because I can really get behind that kind of pettiness. That Indy just hasn't let that lie.
Can you?
In all
you?
That time.
Really? Oh. You think you could get behind that? That kind of pettiness?
100%. I'm going to wait 20 years and I'm going to friggin' win.
You don't say.
And then we're in Connecticut. The retread of the Raiders scene in the classroom. In which Indiana Jones tells his students, X never, ever marks the spots.
Brilliant.
That's going to come back.
Is it?
I love his little office in a cupboard.
And why are all the students desperate to speak to him?
My notes just say, are they in his office because he's hot? Because,
right.
Yeah, but that is it, isn't it?
It's one of two things. Either they're all in love with him and want some one-on-one time with him.
No.
Or he's a shit professor because he's so preoccupied with archaeology.
Exactly.
That they're now like, we don't understand anything.
He hasn't marked any of their papers. They're all coming in with papers that need marking because he's just been in Portugal doing what we've just seen him doing.
Oh, I see.
There you go.
I thought it was because he's fit.
Yeah, of course she went straight there.
I mean, he is.
He receives a package from Venice and then he's taken to Walter Donovan, who shows him the Grail tablet.
Oh, he's so good.
So does this get a pass for you because it's exposition on a stone tablet, not a chalkboard?
So I have some thoughts. It is an exposition dump and I'm annoyed it doesn't happen at a blackboard simply because I've come up with a name for this kind of scene so I don't keep having to describe it.
As the chalkboard scene, okay.
Chalk talk.
Oh, lovely. Absolutely lovely.
So this is a chalk talk, but it happens over, as you say, a tablet. It's what we're getting used to in these films. It's a lot of information about a cup holding the blood of Christ, being the Holy Grail, three knights, three brothers whose job it is to protect the Grail and tell the tale, two markers left behind, tablet one of them, second in tomb with the knight's brother in Venice. It's a lot.
But it's good, though. It's good in the way that Raiders is good, because it's attached to real world stuff. It's attached to actual Christian history, like events and Arthurian legends. So you're like, it's like a there is no way we would have the Da Vinci Code if it wasn't for moments like this in Indy, because it's that idea of tying it to real world events and suddenly validating it. So you feel like, is this true? Are we actually going on a real quest here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like there is a more elegant way of putting across all this information, but equally, because it's Indiana Jones and because we know there's going to be a huge action scene in about 2 minutes, I'm kind of okay with it.
I think it's great, and I think it's almost a staple of the series now. I think it does it really well. It actually, I look forward to this moment, this exposition dump.
You're right, because then in number four it comes too late. So you've got your eye in with where it comes in these films if you watch them in a compressed amount of time, and when you get to four, by the time you get to the cafe with Shia LaBeouf, it's too late, you're over it.
I guess what I'm saying is I prefer it when it's done on the move rather than people static standing in a room.
No. You stand still and you have the John Williams score, the ominous part of his score where it's like, this is scary stuff. There's real jeopardy here through these events and these words. Brilliant.
So they're trying to find the knight's tomb, but their project leader has vanished.
This is where I love the script to this film. It's a great script, and this scene is a really good example of why it's a brilliant script. But obviously, in terms of your characters, it's such a dick move for Donovan to be like, our project leader, your dad, because obviously you open with, I have terrible news, your dad's gone missing. But for a script to end on the punch, to button the scene, it was your father, you're like, yay.
It's quite a villainous thing to do. It's almost like the guy's a villain.
Did you think he was a villain do you remember first watching it and knowing at this point whether he was a villain or
not? I can't remember. I would think not.
No, I don't think I did either. I think Julian Glover is a brilliant Belloc Mark II in this. He inhabits exactly the same kind of stratosphere that Belloc did.
Yeah.
And he's so good in this. Just the right side of like smarmy and slimy and actually downright evil.
I think when I was 11, that's how old I was when I was watching this. I think I trusted everybody at the time. I should have listened to Gonovan, who says, be very careful, don't trust anybody.
I think his American accent's really good in this, but apparently he wasn't happy with it because he's not American, he's English.
I think it's good.
So they are off to Venice, but before we go there, we're going to take a quick break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And we're back in Venice with Dr. Elsa Schneider, played by Alison Doody.
Played by a woman. The joke there, she's a what? She's a woman? You're fucking kidding me.
I do remember being surprised in
well,
my
obviously,
first night. Very surprising.
Can you imagine if, I hope they don't do it in Indiana Jones, and they're like, it's Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a woman. Like, you can't do that now. It's not fair.
Indiana Jones flirts with her.
With Phoebe Waller-Bridge as well. She's just like, listen, I'm here for the money, so fuck it. Yeah. Can you believe it?
She'll turn to camera and go, not again.
Easy, everyone. Sorry. Yeah. Back off. All right.
Indiana Jones flirts with her. She flirts back, but she keeps comparing him with his dad. I wonder why that is. It's only when you sort of really paid attention. She does it 4 times. It's like they were telling you what was going on, but I guess you're not thinking in those terms
not
that this would be
nine.
A possibility.
No.
Well, not when you're any age that she shagged his dad.
It is gross.
it's a shock on any level.
I was oblivious at this point, and indeed later on, I was still very oblivious when the talk's in a sleep line where you're like, I remember hearing that, and I know as a 10-year-old that went over my head.
Yeah.
Because I remember I think I actually went, that's interesting that they share a room in the castle.
No, I got it by then.
No, I didn't.
So they head to a church/library where, guess what? X marks the spot.
Yay!
Set up, payoff. And they head into the tomb being chased by some blokes in fezzes. The Ark of the Covenant's on the wall in a painting, and we hear a snatch of that music.
Yes.
And the line is so great where she goes, what's that? And he goes, it's the Ark of the Covenant. And she goes, you sure? And he goes, pretty sure. Lovely.
And they hit the rats. Watching the behind the scenes footage of this, someone claims that the handlers gave birth to 2,000 disease free rats. I don't think he meant that literally. I don't think handlers can give birth to rats.
Wow.
It's like the Queen Alien, just a rat handler pumping out rat eggs. They're not eggs. Now, I have a question.
You're supposed to like animals. Rat eggs?
Rat eggs. Because the Queen Alien lays eggs. I just imagined a handler with a giant external fallopian tube just pumping out these rat eggs and then the rats hatching on cue, on set. Now, I have a question. Are they wading through petrol with naked flames? Because that bothered me a little bit this time. And I think it bothered me as a kid because he goes, it's petrol. Let's light a torch.
Yes.
I mean, it makes me think of Zoolander when they're at the petrol station. It's that ridiculous because not only is he lighting, flames in the petrol, he's then swimming through it
petrol,
and looking around.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that in petrol.
No.
But I guess we've got to suspend our disbelief. They find the knight's tomb with his story on the shield. They escape into speedboats after blowing the place up.
Well, first they run through Venice. Now, personally, have you been to Venice?
I have been to Venice.
Right, so you've been to Venice,
Chris? Yes, I have been to Venice.
If I was eating outside at a restaurant in Venice and a chase occurred through the dining area and knocked over my table, Venice is very expensive. That is about a 20 quid plate of pasta knocked over. I'd be livid.
I think it's more than 20 quid even.
It probably is.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But then, you know, it's Venice, isn't it? What I mean,
it's 1938. It's probably about 50p.
Yeah, but
Indiana Jones might force himself on you in a bit and then it's all fine, isn't it? So...
Let it go. Come on,
she hasn't picked it up yet. But they escape onto speedboats and Indy has a punch up with one of the Fez guys on the back of a speedboat. Are we liking this action scene?
I love it because of the... So in all Indiana Jones films, even in 4, all the henchmen get brilliant deaths. So you're expecting the brother of the cruciform sword to get a brilliant henchman death in that propeller and then he doesn't. And that's brilliant at number 3 to sort of pull back from that.
And this was in Chris Columbus's 85 script and this was also in the 1978 story conference. That's how far back. The idea was that after the mine train, they would escape onto speedboats.
Wow.
And Lucas said, the only thing I want to do with that, and it's going to be hard to do, is that he gets chased and they're firing at each other. He gets into a harbour where all these big boats are and he races down in between two boats just as they're starting to close. So that was
so good.
11 years before he'd already...
It's so good. But what sets up that visual gag of the part of a speedboat emerging from the two boats is that wonderful line where it's, are you crazy? Don't go between them. Yeah. Go between them. Are you crazy?
Mm. She delivers that really well.
So well.
Yeah.
And that propeller, going into the propeller, was also in Chris Columbus's 85 script. So as I say, they don't let an idea go unused, basically. Which makes me think we'll see that mechanical arm. We find out that these fellas are part of a brotherhood determined to protect the secrets of the Grail. So were they goodies who didn't deserve to die?
Yeah, but that's what's good about... I mean, it's hard, isn't it? Because it's hard to be critical of this film because they occupy like a neutral space. So they're not goodies, they're not baddies. They're going to get in his way. But then he's like, oh, do you know what? If you're on an honourable quest, you crack on kind of thing. So yeah, they occupy a new space in terms of the films so far in not being a traditional like goodie or baddie, but I like it.
They are trying to kill him though.
Initially, yeah. And then they stop when he kind of explains what he's up to.
Yeah, but at the point where he's sort of fended them off, I mean, they're very careful because they tend to kill themselves in the chasing Indy process as opposed to him directly murdering them. Mm. So he hasn't really killed them and also they're trying to kill him. So it's fine. Indy's hands are clean.
Okay.
Fair enough. And then we're heading to Austria, to Salzburg, to rescue his dad.
At this point, did you not go, this is like Raiders, but the pace has been cranked up to 11?
It's unreal. Like, the action just, there's like 50 times more in it. Mm. Like, it just doesn't ever stop. It's really, really impressive.
It's great. Indy borrows Elsa's French beret.
Yeah.
And does a Scottish accent.
See, my family are Scottish. And so when I was younger, I was rolling on the floor. I thought this was so, so funny.
I've caught a wee sniffle.
Yeah, brilliant.
It's the way he says the word tapestries that floored me. I'm not going to try it, but it's bizarre.
He's great.
Yep.
It's the first time you've seen Indiana Jones go full comedic.
I'm going to go into this on Thursday's episode at the end, but the haunted house castle in that they came up with for the Columbus script is in Scotland, and so there is some crossover here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might come up in Indy 5, but we'll get to that when we do Indy 4. So he locates his dad, and then the movie turns into sort of The Odd Couple.
Mm-hmm.
50 minutes we've been having a hell of a time with this movie, loving every second, and they wait until 50 minutes to unleash their secret weapon.
They become this adorable double act.
Oh.
You know, it starts with his dad hitting him over the head, calling him Junior.
He goes, yes, sir. First time you've been seen Indy be deferential.
Yeah.
He says, don't call me Junior. And then he murders 4 people and it's still funny.
Yeah. And then this dog goes, look what you've done.
Henry knew he had to get the book as far away from him as he could. The Nazis show up. Do you think my son would be that stupid? It's just joke after joke and they all land.
Every single one. Every line out of Connery's mouth is absolute gold.
So we're getting humour, but we're also getting his character development because he's suddenly this little boy desperate for his father's approval. And then normality resumes quite quickly. So we have this moment where he seems like a little boy, but then he does pick up a machine gun and mows down a bunch of Nazis. And it's like, yeah, that's Indy. Henry, they get caught and Henry tells him that Elsa is a Nazi. Indy does not believe him. Alex, you said you didn't understand this at the time. I did. I remember thinking that's a twist. It's a good twist.
Yeah. Apparently Connery improvised that as a joke for the crew and everyone laughed and they went, actually, that's great. Let's keep that in.
Yeah, because it makes sense because the conversation they have on the airship later feels like that's where it naturally was supposed to happen. Mm. But
would you have a conversation with your dad like that? Like, would you have a conversation with your dad where it's like...
I wouldn't do it in the first place.
No, because when he's like, I was the next man, it's like, yo.
Do you mind it? Do you feel it tars like the film a little bit, this idea that they both had sex with the same woman?
I don't think it's that. It's more that the conversation they have about it is really easy. They don't seem freaked out by it at all.
I think it's because that acceptance they both have of like, well, we are studs. So.
Yeah, and that's weird as well. Like between a father and son, I just find that, I don't know.
I think because there's no element of them doing it behind the other's back or two-timing, I'm okay with it. And
I think it's because every time it's announced, it's done in a very funny way.
Yeah.
You're chuckling rather than going, what?
But our heroine is our villain. So a good time to ask, what did you guys make of Elsa as the love interest in this movie?
I've met her. Did I tell you?
No.
Yeah, no, I never have a celebrity story, but I've been for a drink with her.
Dude,
I know. She's, that was weird.
I regret that, don't you?
Can we cut that, Blondie? Cut me saying Doody.
That's staying in. So, new catchphrase for the show. Forget I'm all in. It's now Doody.
I've gone red. So, quickly tell the story.
Even his legs have gone red.
Yeah, there's no story that's better than what you just said. I was in Dublin. The people I were with knew her. I was introduced to her. I had a drink with her. I was really starstruck. She's really charming, really beautiful. That's that.
Lovely. Any Indiana Jones chat?
No, because I was too self-conscious to be like, tell me everything.
It's weird, isn't it? Because, I mean, I can say it now because it was going to be my change and then I took it out of my change. But there is an argument for sort of the romance being overshadowed throughout this movie between Indy and her by his bromance with his dad.
Yep.
But
which is great.
You start sort of chipping away at that and going, well, should they have more chemistry? Should he care about her more? Should there be more about their relationship? And I think anything that you come up with would dilute the relationship with his dad. So you sort of go, no, I don't think you would change much.
I think we probably do need to talk about, although let's just do it now. I'll be quick. Mm. He does force himself on her in Venice, the kiss. That is a forced upon moment, right? But okay. I'll buy that just about, right? Because I'm not going to justify it. Whatever. Hmm. But later on, when he goes to get the book, he does throttle her, and that's not cool. Like, he grabs her by the neck and threatens to kill her. And so let's look at the progression of Indiana Jones and his women. Like, so he's gone from politely, let's call him a statutory rapist, to Temple of Doom, he's just shouting at this woman constantly because she's freaked out by everything that's going on. Mm. And then he does grab someone by the throat. And it sounds like an excuse, but they don't even have like a very physical relationship where you've seen that sort of physicality.
I know what you're saying. And like looking at it very clinically, like he is literally in the middle of Berlin surrounded by Nazis. Mm-hmm. And if she screams, he dies, his dad dies, the Nazis get the Grail.
But he's walking away and he turns around.
No, he grabs her to stop her screaming so she can't alert the thousands upon thousands of Nazis that are there. I think it's a very purposeful thing. Because doesn't he say something like, you try and scream and I'll squeeze? Mm. Mm-hmm. So it's to stop her making noise. I agree that it's quite jarring now through today's lens, but there's
I don't mind seeing Nazis get throttled. Okay. I've never had a problem with it, I never will.
But the film is saying because... No, I know, but the direction of the film at that point...
That's Vicky's problem. Her Aryan race that she's breeding. She's worried about any threat.
Look, unless it's a special occasion, don't grab me by the fucking neck, okay?
Happy birthday, Mark.
Let's move on. No.
I was going to say I like it because I think the progression's good in terms of Marion was the equal, Willy was the damsel in distress, Elsa's the villain. I think it's cool that they've tried to reinvent it, and I like the fact that she's a bit like him and that she goes out and gets what she wants, whether it's a man or an artifact.
And
she doesn't care.
By this point in the franchise, your baddie is a woman, about time, like why not?
And we discover, as Alex said, that Donovan is a villain around this period.
Yeah. Do you not like the line when they're pulling away from the castle, actually, where he goes, Germany's declared war on the Jones boys.
It's a trailer line, isn't it?
But that's why it works, because in the trailer, I remember hearing that in the trailer and going, their legend is now so big that a country declares war on you. You're such an iconic person.
Is it just me that's got a real weakness for, you know, when they're talking to him and he's talking about where Brody is and he says that this section, he's got a 2-day head start on you, which is more than he needs. He's got friends in every town and village from here to the Sudan. That section of script, just to geek out for 2 seconds, I am obsessed with.
It's brilliant.
And it's brilliantly written, directed, acted. And the repetition of every, the rhyming with never, I just fucking love it. And I love the cut to Brody, like stumbling through the market.
The cut happens straight after he said, he'll blend in, disappear, you'll never see him again. And then Marcus is just being very British and lost and confused.
It's just perfect.
He once got lost in his own museum.
I mean, obviously, they've changed Marcus Brody here. He was Indy's father figure. Now Henry Jones is in the picture. He can't be that anymore.
Yeah.
And so they make him sort of this figure of fun. That's one thing I'm not sure I like.
I think it gets a bit jarring later.
Yeah.
He's just like the comic relief and it's too much because he has switched so much in terms of what his function is.
Yeah.
I do find it a bit irritating later, but it's like a minor thing.
And it's nice to see Salah, although he's not given a lot to do in this film.
No, but he has some very, very, very funny lines. In fact, possibly the funniest line towards the end, but we'll get to it.
And then we're back in Austria. Lots of misunderstanding and physical comedy with the Jones boys being tied to each other and the revolving fireplace gag.
It's so. Who's that woman? Does she shout alarm or is there a word in German? I don't know. That woman she sees them spinning around and she looks at them and then just screams at the top of her voice. Yeah. She's incredible.
That spinning fireplace was possibly one of the greatest things I'd seen in a movie.
It's so brilliantly choreographed, though. It's so complicated. The way those gags keep coming, and it's just wonderful. And then they're out.
This is so much better.
they're in a motorbike chase, and they get a lot of mileage simply from the way Connery looks at him with disdain.
Oh yeah, it's the two of them. So Indy grins to himself, having defeated some guy on a motorcycle. Looks to his dad for approval, and his dad just looks at him like, "I'm not impressed with that. Yeah. Why would you do that?"
They shot that in George Lucas's back garden.
That's massive.
Well, yeah, it's called Lucas Valley.
It's called Germany. It's huge.
He jousts with a flagpole. Motorbike joust.
Yeah.
They reach a crossroads and they have to decide, do they go to Brody and the Grail, or do they go for the diary, Venice or Berlin? And that's a funny little gag in itself, that there's a signpost that says Venice and Berlin. But they decide they need the diary because it has clues to make it through the three traps.
Yeah, but also they decide they need the diary because Sean Connery can't remember what's in the diary, which in any other film you'd be like, well, that's a bit shit, isn't it? But in this, doesn't matter. Fine.
It's fine.
You can't remember.
They make a good joke out of it.
I can't remember.
So they were into Berlin, the Nazi rally you guys mentioned. In the behind-the-scenes material, the costume designer reckons the uniforms that the actors are wearing are genuine and that he found them in Eastern Europe somewhere. Does that sound right?
No.
That they're just selling genuine Nazi uniforms in a shop in Eastern Europe?
It's probably just easier to make them from America. Do you know what I mean?
And he had enough for the whole cast? Sounds wrong to me about that.
I don't know. I think there's probably a fair few kicking around that part of the world.
And Spielberg says that he felt uncomfortable asking all the extras to do the Heil Hitler salute, so he made them all cross their fingers behind their backs while they were shooting it.
Happy to do it to a monkey, though. Did the monkey cross its fingers?
The monkey had no choice.
Mm. The monkey was just grabbing at something.
Yeah.
We've established that.
He was indoctrinated.
Books are being burned, and Indiana Jones comes face to face with Adolf Hitler in one of the film's best gags.
It's a good gag.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
No?
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Why?
I'd like to save it for my change. I don't like it.
Right. I really like Indy's face in this scene. It's good face acting from Harrison Ford.
Just the payoff of Hitler signing the diaries.
I'll tell you why. Do you remember that episode of Red Dwarf?
Can't hold it in. I'll do it at the end.
I'll do the bigger bit at the end, but it just reminded me of that episode of Red Dwarf where they meet Hitler and I was like, that's funny, and so I can't appreciate this.
You've met Hitler in loads of different things.
I know.
All right. Is it time slides?
Not personally.
Time slides.
Yes.
It's Time Slides, the Red Dwarf episode where photographs, old photographs come to life.
I think it's like, it looks like the
Lister,
same actor.
Lister turns up next to him and starts making fun of him behind him while he's giving his speech.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good episode.
I know. Hmm?
Is it Mr. Bronson playing Hitler?
Oh my God, is it?
I meant to check that.
It looks a lot like him.
I can't see it. I think it is.
If we're doing celebrity stories, I once met the actor who plays Mr. Bronson at a Dungeons & Dragons convention when I was 17 years old. Yeah. He gave me some advice about breaking into the industry.
Did he?
Yeah, he really did.
Bless him.
I mean, I did ask him. I was like, you know, I mean, I want to, you know.
I want to be on the telly.
I want to be on the telly. And he was like, well, there's a book you need to be in called Spotlight. And I was like, oh, don't know what that is, but I'll find out, Mr. Bronson.
Mr. Bronson. Yeah. Mr. Bronson, should I do a podcast one day?
Yeah. What you did to Danny Kendall was atrocious.
Yes, Michael Sheard. Yeah, that was Adolf Hitler.
Just bought Chris some time.
Exactly the amount of time I needed. It's perfect. And then we're on to a Zeppelin.
A Zeppelin?
Zeppelin. Where Indy's,
Zeppelin.
Indy's trying to bond with his father, which Vicky does not like.
I do like. It's
you don't like the sex talk?
I just think the sex... No, I don't even mind the sex talk. It's just a weird tone that the sex talk is quite easy.
Do you want me to make it weirder?
Yes.
Neither of them are wearing trousers in that scene.
Are they wearing pants?
They're wearing pants, but no trousers.
Why? They're too hot.
Connery was too hot. So he took his trousers off and Harrison Ford did the same.
What a power move that is. Wow. I'm going to take my trousers off. You deal with it.
Here we go.
Oh, no. He actually did undo him. Alex, put it away. Put it away, Alex. Stop flapping it.
Party time on the pod. I told you I was a fan of this episode. Listen, I do have a problem with this scene, though. I don't like the no ticket joke.
No.
Neither do I. That's a good point.
It really bothers me. It's always bothered me. I think it's the idea that it sort of makes a fool of Vogel, and you'd think that throwing an SS officer out of the window on a Zeppelin
would raise the alarm somehow.
People wouldn't just go, that's fine. You're allowed
you
to do that as
work.
A waiter.
Yeah, if he said it in German, that would work because he'd be showing his education, he'd be showing how good he is at like being a sort of Bond spy, but he says it in English and you're just like, why would everyone be like, so who the fuck are you, by the way? So, no. But the line when they're doing their bonding, I love that bonding scene where Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, is not getting what he wants from his dad and his dad cares but doesn't quite care because you set up later when he thinks he's died. But the line where they more or less cut after him, she's so good, where he's like, he's kind of saying like, oh, it's not my fault. You left when you were becoming interesting.
It's harsh, but
imagine saying that to your son. But also saying it with like, so it's not my fault. Like, not apologize. Yeah, I thought it was amazing.
Yep. So there's a lovely moment where they're in the aircraft. I won't say it again. And the shadows on the table start moving and they realise they're flying back to Germany. That's a very Spielberg moment.
Yeah, it's great.
And so they take a biplane that's just hanging around and they end up in a dogfight. And Henry shoots the plane's tail.
That's good. The 11 o'clock where he's like, 11, 12, and points out all that. I've heard, like, so I watched that and I did go, ugh, when I saw it this time. But I think that's because I've seen it so many times since then, and this was possibly the first time I saw someone going, it's actually 3:30 on the watch.
But I do like it when he says, son, I'm sorry they got
up. Yeah, it's great.
It's good delivery from Sean. Steal a car. There's a fun moment with a crash in a tunnel with a plane coasting by them.
Yeah, I mean, why does the pilot fly into a tunnel, though? It's a great visual gag, but it's like an insane thing to do.
And they head down to a beach where Henry saves the day by running at some seagulls with an umbrella. The whole sequence, I think, is brilliant in that it does this thing that Indiana Jones does so well, which is balancing humour and thrills. Because it's hard to do, I think, and it's just as exciting as it is funny.
Yeah. I mean, the best bit in it is where Sean Connery goes, people are trying to kill me. It's a new experience. And Ferris Ford goes, happens to me all the time. You're like, oh, there's both their characters in one wonderful exchange.
And then we're in the Republic of Hatay and we meet the Sultan. Did you recognise the Sultan?
Alexei
Sale.
Yeah,
that's weird. And then we're into a big friggin' chase involving tanks and camels and horses. Indy shoves a rock into a tank's gun barrel. That's from the from the 85 script. Chris Columbus wrote that one.
Disproportionately love that. I don't know why. It just looks really satisfying.
Yep.
And then we get this Vic Armstrong stunt where he jumps off a horse onto a tank. Alex, I know you're a fan of this stunt, as you recently spoke about it on your new podcast, Just the Facts.
Oh, thank you for mentioning my new podcast, Just the Facts.
on the Dexter Fletcher episode you talked about.
Episode
it.
One, yeah. Only launched the other day with Dexter Fletcher. We were talking because he worked with Vic Armstrong on Eddie Eagle. Yeah. And so we ended up talking about it. If you would like to have a listen to my new podcast, Just the Facts with Alex Zane, you can find it.
We've done it now.
Apple, Spotify.
I've done it now.
Wherever you get podcasts. Anyway, Vic Armstrong talks about that being one of his favourite stunts that he's ever done. And also one of the most dangerous because... horses naturally stop when you let go of the reins, and to have a horse carry on running alongside the tank as he let go of the reins to jump onto the tank it was quite difficult. So he's really proud of it.
Yeah, they had to build that ridge that he rides up, and then he said that it's so his autobiography is really interesting. He talks about it in there. If he's too far, he won't make it onto the tank. But if he's too close, the horse might fall off the ledge and die. So he said what he did was he put rocks all along the edge of the ledge so the horse wouldn't go too near to them. And then he put pegs on the side of the stirrups so he'd have something to leap off when he jumps.
Oh, wow.
And that's how he made the jump. And it's perfect. An 18-foot lateral jump.
It's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
And yet, when you sort of watch it, in the context of a chase, you're like, hey, Indy's just jumped onto a tank, and you have to sort of take yourself back from it and go, holy shit, actually, that must have been fucking terrifying.
And so we've got Indy hanging off the side of a tank. Indy fighting.
Do you know the bit that bothers me most about that? It's not the fact that he's being hit with a spade by a Nazi. It's not the fact that, you know, he's going to potentially be driven into a rock face. It's all the gravel going down his neck and shirt. I'm just like, oh, that would be awful.
And if you watch the behind the scenes, it's just the line of British blokes with little tubs of soil just dropping it on top of him as he goes by. That's how they created that effect. It's like 20 blokes all standing there dropping soil on him. He fights Nazis on top of a tank and they go under the treads, which is from the Columbus script in 85. And then it looks like Indiana Jones has died falling off a cliff. Oh, God, I've lost him and I never told him anything. I just wasn't ready. 5 minutes would have been enough. Would it? Would 5 minutes have been enough?
No.
Is that not a gag of some description?
I don't think so, because he's so serious.
Yeah,
in that
I wondered. That's why it's weird. It's a weird line, but I don't think it is a joke.
I thought it was like a compliment to his son that actually he knows so much. I only needed 5 minutes more to fill in the blanks that he didn't know, or maybe it was like I've told him everything, but
I thought he was alluding to
I love you, or
yeah, I love you.
Yeah, I love you. I think he was saying what I need to tell him, the really important stuff, would only take 5 minutes, because, and maybe the reason I haven't done it is because I've overthought it, and that's why I haven't sat down to talk to him, because I think it will take forever. But actually, the really crystal clear important stuff is I love you, and that takes no time. Mm.
And while he's mourning his son's death, Indiana Jones joins them.
So funny. It's such a good joke.
It's such a good joke. And then the embrace that they share is genuinely touching. Mm.
But also because it's still sad, because his dad is so pleased to see him. He's not died. And all he says is, well done, rather than saying, oh, I just need 5 minutes now to tell you everything. No.
But that's because the embrace changes from him being overwhelmed by seeing him again to him then remembering
who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then we're in the home straight at the Canyon of the Crescent Moon, the resting place of the Holy Grail. This is all very much from the 85 script, where one bite from the Garden of Immortal Peaches gives you immortality. And they even say same speeches when talking about Nazis can save the world, but Donovan doesn't care about that. He wants everlasting life.
Is it just peaches, or is there a variety of fruit there? And if you pick the wrong fruit, you die immediately. Like if you had a banana, it's like, you age really quickly.
No, a nectarine, because that's like a posh peach.
Oh, there you go.
No, I'm afraid that's all new. Mm-hmm. Donovan shoots Henry in the stomach. Now he needs the Grail for its healing powers. They said that was a tricky decision when they were writing that. They were quite worried about shooting Henry in the stomach. They thought that would upset people too much.
Wow. Okay.
Why? And what's... I'm sorry, I'm confused.
Just thought it would be too shocking.
Oh, okay.
It's all right, Alex, we're getting to your favourite bit now. We're into the test.
Does Donovan not age 200 years in about 10 seconds?
Alex, we're into your bit. We're into the test of the traps.
Yay!
Do you want to do the first one involving the breath of God, Alex? Because I know you like to do it all the time. You never shut up about it.
A penitent man.
Why do you say it all the time, God?
I don't know, because how does it ever come up? Because you're not penitent in any way.
No, we're just in the pub and Alex will start saying it.
Sometimes you'll go, penitent man. I'm like, what is this about ordering drinks? It just comes out. It's always lovely to hear.
What I hadn't noticed until this watch, though, is that a penitent man doesn't just kneel before God. A penitent man kneels and definitely then rolls immediately.
Yeah, I know that.
Oh, God.
Why do penitent men do that?
just knelt, he'd be chopped in half.
Yeah, it's the phantasm discs are nearly killing him. So that's that one. The next one is the word of God. Only in the footsteps of God will he proceed.
Can I just add a little nitpicky script thing here, just because I noticed it and I thought it would have been good? So you know the setup with River Phoenix at the beginning, when he walks in to see his dad says, not now, let's take a minute, do your Greek numbers. And so he starts reciting Greek numbers. Would it not have been better if it was do your Latin alphabet?
Oh, great.
Yes. It would, Vicky, and that should be your change.
Yeah, if you're listening, James Mangold, I live near Yorkshire, so I can pop up any time and help you out on number 5.
So he has to step on the letters that make Jehovah, but in Latin, Jehovah starts with an I. At this point, it feels a bit like we're watching 1980s Tea Time Game Show Nightmare.
Amazing. I have one, really, and this is such a petty problem, but when he falls through the J, he grips on to the letter in front of him to pull himself back up.
And that shouldn't
And
work.
That letter would not have been the right letter, and so that should have crumbled should have as well, and he should have fallen.
You're right.
Don't care about that one. Yep. Vicky's was better.
No, Vicky's was better. I'm just saying, I prefixed it with this is petty, but it always annoys me, so I'm saying it. You know, we're all friends here, right?
Third test.
No.
Yep. Third test, path of God, only leap from lion's head will he prove his worth. So it's the leap of faith. He must believe. He holds his heart, shuts his eyes, steps out. Unfortunately, it's a bit like a goose step from a Nazi.
That's true.
Which is unfortunate.
I think it is a shame they linger on the foot. Like he should, it should be quicker. But this is my favourite.
Because I don't like his shoes.
No, of course you, because they're worn out.
Yeah.
I loved this bit as a child. I remember seeing this for the first time and I had no idea what was going to happen and I thought he was going to fly.
And I think it's a nice... It's the third test that I think it works thematically because all the indie movies seem to be about leaps of faith. Mm. That comes up time and time again throughout the series. And it's cool, so it's a path made of rocks designed to look like what's below, which is really clever. ILM created that.
It's amazing.
Yeah, really good
And it's
effect.
So satisfying when he scatters the pebbles so you can then see it properly. And it's really like daring do, like Hansel and Gretel breadcrumbs, like how you're going to get back. And it's like, that's such a good idea. Mm.
And then he finds the 700-year-old knight.
This confused me when I was a child. I thought he was a ghost, but he's not, is he?
No, he's 700 years old because he's drunk from the Grail.
Played by Robert Edison.
I don't know if it's true. It's one of those uncorroborated stories, but I remember them saying that they wanted Laurence Olivier for it, but he was too ill at the time. But that would have been interesting.
And would have.
I love it, and I do love it, and I'm almost regretful to say it, and I think it's mainly because it's about the Holy Grail, but there's an ever so slight soupçon of Monty Python and the Holy Grail about this bit. It's just the way he's like,
and he falls backwards.
And I just, every time I see it, I try and go, don't think it. Don't think that. Because if you think that, it's like Ray summoning the Marshmallow Man. It's like, I'm just like, don't visualize Monty Python and the Holy Grail. And I do.
Donovan and Elsa appear and they must choose. True Grail will give life, false will take away.
Did you see the setup for this earlier in the castle where Elsa tells Vogel not to kill them and Donovan agrees with her and goes, always do what the doctor orders.
Yes.
Nice.
This bit.
Elsa chooses a beautiful cup worthy of Christ, the cup of the King of Kings, and Donovan drinks.
Give it to someone else first, Donovan.
Yeah.
Let just go. Are you sure? Because I might let Indy drink from it first just to double check.
Yeah, I feel like he wants to be the only one who gets immortal life, though. Mm. I think that's why he doesn't get someone else to test it. Mm. But you're right. And he starts aging, doesn't he?
It's so scary.
It's awful. I it's up there with the Nazis melting faces.
I think it might be worse.
I do too.
Yeah.
No.
And because she's screaming her head off as well. Yeah, I think it is scary. Mm.
It's because he lunges for her, like, even as he's rotting
he's mad
and dying,
as hell,
he's like, I'm going to try and take you with me.
So he rots and his skeleton is dashed against the wall and he turns to dust. And that's exactly how it plays out in the 85 script with the peach. Mm. But he dies because his heart wasn't pure there rather than drinking from the wrong cup. That's the difference.
And then the knight has possibly one of the greatest put downs in cinema history. He chose... Holy. No fucking kidding.
Indy picks the plainest cup, the cup of a carpenter, fitting as Harrison Ford was a carpenter. And he downs it. He chose wisely, but the Grail cannot pass beyond the Great Seal. That is the boundary and the price of immortality.
You'd be like, sorry, what rules at this point? I don't think so. But again, just like, oh, sure, fine, no problem.
Because I remember coming out of the cinema, age 10, having seen it and not really picking up on that and thinking that this is amazing news. They can just make an infinite amount of indie movies because Indy and his dad are now immortal.
Oh, oh my God, you were an absolute idiot.
Oh, that's cute.
I was just so excited at the idea of them being a never-ending franchise.
Well, and guess what? That's what's happening.
And you were right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this was, we're a long way from Kingdom of the Crystal Skull at that point.
He heals his dad's wound and then Elsa gets that look in her eye that we've seen before in Indiana Jones movies. She passes across the seal and the earth starts opening up and she falls in trying to grab at the cup.
Well, if you watch very carefully, the Grail hasn't fallen into the chasm and Elsa dives for it and whangs it straight into the chasm. She's not, I mean, they've got, clearly gone, so you need to knock it just into the chasm, but she's not even close. She just goes, whang!
Oh, it's interesting to say that because they do talk about how impossible they found shooting that scene with the gimbal and getting it all right. It was a real problem. So maybe it was just like,
that's
just,
the best of a bad bunch.
Yeah.
She gets that look in her eyes, but Indy gets that look in his eyes as well. He starts doing the same. He wants the cup suddenly.
Yeah.
But his dad convinces him to stop. Indiana calls him Indiana for the first time.
Brings goosebumps on.
Indiana, let it go. Yeah.
I mean, that's, so first of all, let it go. Elsa, Frozen, connection. But you two won't know that. You haven't seen Frozen. But
I have. Yeah, I like the song.
Everyone's nieces out there, that was for you.
Tenuous at best.
But the thing is, so I know you know this already, but I'm just going to be the one to go on about it. Him telling him to let it go, obviously he calls him Indiana for the first time ever. Mm. But on all these levels, he's saying, let it go. Like, I am letting go of the past to save you, which is what I didn't do when you were small, because his son has said to him, you ignored me my whole childhood for relics. Mm. So this most important relic of his, of Sean Connery's whole life is in front of him. Let it go. And he's also saying, you need to let go of those feelings of resentment because it's done, it's dealt with. And literally, let this cup go because, and I love you.
But if you look how close his fingers are to it, he probably could have got
probably
it.
Could have had
he
it.
Probably could have got it and had everything that you just said and the Grail.
Yeah.
But they found each other. And so the ending has nothing to do with the Grail at this point as well. So they come out, they leave the building and Henry says...
Wait, what have we done? The knight waving at this point?
No, sorry, I've got... The knight waves as the temple starts to collapse around him.
So
So what happens to that knight? Because obviously...
He wants to die though, doesn't
he? But the temple, his bit of the temple isn't collapsing, it appears. He's still there. So he's now trapped... Immortal, without even a grail to protect. I think he's waving at that point, as in like, I'm 700 years old. Come and help me. Kill me out of here.
Kill me now.
And I think Indy's just like, no, because Indy is the one who goes, no, Dad, come on, let's go. I think it's because he's like, I've met that guy. He's a fucking nightmare. He also,
idiot.
He will let you poison yourself and only then tell you that you've poisoned yourself. So we should just leave him. Come back, you bastards.
So they get outside and Henry says he's found illumination.
Oh, yeah.
So earlier he'd said, may he whom illuminated this illuminate me.
Yep.
That is him. So he's found illumination. Indy's found his dad and the Joneses have learned to love and respect each other. And that's when the music starts.
So good.
We learn that his name is Henry Jones Jr.
This is Salah's best moment where he goes, the dog? You're named after the dog?
And then he pisses himself.
He loves it.
Salah pisses himself. And then that's it. We get silhouettes of them riding off into the sunset. And the credits roll.
How did you feel about that? Four men having succeeded. Riding off into the sunset.
It is weird
job
to look
done.
At. What doctor? She was never a doctor. No, she was a woman. Could you believe that?
So, should we do the bit?
It almost ruined the end of it for me. I was like, I bet Vicky's picked up on that. Four men, off they go. Happy as Larry. Yeah.
If you want something doing.
It feels like the right ending though, doesn't it?
It does. It feels great.
It feels right. Something about it.
It is not my change. More men is my change.
Well, in terms of favourite scene, my favourite scene is them riding off into the sunset.
Oh.
Off onto their next adventure. I just remember thinking, this is such a perfect ending to this trilogy. I'm sad we'll never see another Indiana Jones movie, but equally, I'm happy that this is how it ends because this feels perfect.
Mm.
Vicky, what's your favourite scene?
Other puzzles, because as a child, this was just the right amount of intrigue. Like, they're not complicated, but they are scary. And also, again, the henchman that goes first for the Breath of God, he scared me to death when I was little because he looks terrified. So that just sold the whole thing. And then the leap of faith, I love the hand on the heart and what that means. And just when that path appears out of nowhere, it's my favourite bit by a million miles.
Ditto, same as Vicky. It's what indie is absolutely all about. It's about puzzle solving in life and death situations, like reading from a little book. Like it's Indiana Jones. So yeah, the puzzle solving in the temple at life or death.
Vicky, what would you change?
Are we not doing MVW?
Who is your MVW, Vicky?
So I'm going to give it to Harrison Ford this time because I haven't done the other two times. It's not going to be the next time. So Harrison Ford, because the character there is so well established, we now get another layer of complexity, which is seeing the boy becoming a man and trying to prove himself to someone who appears not to care. And to add that layer to that character, he does really well. And I have to give it to him at some point, so...
Alex.
See, I planned better, Victoria.
I know you did.
You totally screwed up, didn't you? Because I gave it to Indy on... which one was it? Well, either way, I've already given it to Harrison Ford, which frees me up to give it to the genuine MVW of this film, which is Sean Connery. No questions asked, 100%. Chris?
Sean Connery.
There you go.
What can I do?
Just do it better.
Mm. Right.
Plan ahead.
Do the podcast better.
Do the podcast better.
Alex.
And now Chris and Alex ride off into the sun.
Alex, if you could change anything.
Do you know what? Honestly, I genuinely struggled with this. I think along with Aliens and Jaws, this may be one of the most perfect films we've done on the podcast. I mentioned earlier about the Indian Elsa relationship and maybe beefing that up a bit. But then I thought about the expense of, you know, losing Indy and his dad. So I've got this. When the Nazi soldier is crushed by the wheels of the tank, I want a stripe of blood on the rock crusher. Like on the rock crusher in Temple of Doom.
I thought that. Why not do a callback to
and
that?
And a splat of blood on the plane in Raiders. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Vicky.
I don't think we need to go to Berlin and see Adolf Hitler. I think retrieving the diary is a little bit of a distraction, and it's there so we go and see Hitler, because I suppose by this point you've had the Nazis once, and so you've got to really pay it off with your ultimate big boss baddie. But if we are going to go to Berlin, I think we need more of a caper when we get there. So they arrive and very easily he finds Elsa and very easily he takes the book off her and then he's gone. So maybe, although it would make the film too long, a bit more of a set piece where something happens rather than just following a woman down a stone walkway or whatever and strangling her.
Yeah, for good reason. my change is I'm not as big a fan of Donovan as you guys are, and I think the movie could do with having some kind of backstory with him that connects to the present. And I might even put him in the office at the start with Henry Jones arguing about the Grail, because he's friends with Henry.
Mm. Yes.
And so I just think like it could be more joined up with him.
Okay.
And it would make him a more compelling villain, because right now I find him a bit bland because I don't really know who he is. Mm. I don't really get a sense of who this guy is.
Interesting.
Also, I have got one other one, which is the best one.
Go.
Cast Tom Selleck as Federer. Federer? Fedora.
Not Roger Federer.
No. I think that would have been a really lovely thing to do. And I think it would have been funny as well.
Yeah, it would have been brilliant.
That would have been good.
Yeah.
That would have been good.
Okay, we're done.
Are we doing a quiz, Chris?
Yeah, why not?
All right.
Because so many characters in this franchise are named after dogs, today we're doing a canine quiz.
Okay.
I'll give you the description. You tell me the dog.
I literally know no dogs.
It's not even like, it's not even me saying, oh, I hope that animal's okay. He just said dogs and you went, oh, dogs.
Because you know loads about dogs.
I really don't.
Yes, you do.
I don't. I know that they need feeding and watering and like walking and that's it.
All right.
I'm going to give you the description. You give me the
dog. Are we allowed to say big or small? Is that a type of dog?
Some of these dogs are real and some of them are fictional.
Oh, okay.
So, who was the first dog in space?
Laika.
That's correct.
Right. I know.
You could have said small or big, but it wouldn't have been correct.
Actually, that was a medium dog, so that's fine. Yes.
I'm gonna look at you when I say the questions, so we can try.
Why?
And connect.
Why? That's intimidating.
To try and connect with you.
Well, I'm trying to read your mind, like Kate Blanchett. Watch out.
Like a hive mind. Full circle.
What was the name of the dog in Frasier?
Fuck, Spike. No, Eric. It was called
close. That's close.
Ernie.
That's really close.
He's going quite...
Eddie.
Yeah.
Shit. Did you know that all along? Fuck off.
What was the controversial name of the yellow Labrador in Downton Abbey?
Oh, I don't know. Fucking Adolf Hitler.
Hitler.
Stalin. Hitler.
It became controversial after the show was on air because it became a thing. I think it's named after a Greek god, but it also got that name got used elsewhere.
Dionysus.
I mean, just the last three, four letters of that
Zeus.
Would work.
Isis.
Correct.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I literally told you the last four letters of that.
And while... I have said, I know nothing about
it. Wasn't about dogs. He said, say the end of Dionysus. And I did. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a Y, but nevertheless, Alex figured it out.
Because I know how to fucking spell that.
Who is the Skye Terrier who reportedly guarded his master's grave for 40 years?
Greyfriars Bobby! Yes!
Now it's wrong. Now it's correct.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
why do you know that?
It's a beautiful family of Scottish.
It's a beautiful, it's a famous story. Okay. The statues in Edinburgh, Disney made a film about it.
Right, good.
What is the name of the Simpsons dog?
Santa's Little Helper.
Correct. And what was the name of Cliff's dog in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Oh.
Mutt.
I'll tell you what it wasn't. It wasn't called Brad Pitbull. See what I've done there?
It's got a really brutal name.
No, it hasn't.
Has it not?
No, it's got quite a nice name.
Cuddly Monkey.
It's Cuddly
Steve.
Monkey.
Right.
Steve.
No, the answer is Brandy.
Oh, okay.
Alex wins, but I do want to tell you my tiebreaker because back in the mid-1990s, my mates and I were in the same pub as a young soap opera actor in Croydon, and we kept asking him where his fictional dog from the telly was. We asked him so many times that he eventually left the pub. What was the name of that dog?
What was he in?
He was in a soap opera, an English soap opera, and he had a dog. And he lived in Croydon. And you'll know the name of the dog. It was a stupid name.
The only dog...
Oh, Thingy!
Yeah.
Oh, fuck! He's called like Bulls. I know, it's Thingy's dog.
Yep.
Fucking hell. He's
what called... was the name of Robbie Jackson's dog in EastEnders? Yeah.
He was called like Bullseye or...
No, it's worse than that.
Bald Patch.
No. It was Wellard.
Yes!
I think I remember that. Do you know what the lighthouse keeper's dog was called in Fraggle
Sprocket.
Rock? Yes! Well done.
Because we like dogs.
Yep, we do.
Do you know, I thought it was going to be a question about breeds of dogs. That's why I was so on it at you.
And you still lost.
Yeah. A moment of relief tempered by utter failure.
All right then. So, moving on from the quiz, which I won. I am giving you a clue now. We're moving away from Indiana Jones, or we will be doing next week. Obviously, Thursday is still to come when we're talking about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. But looking ahead to next week, here is your clue for next week's movies. Too much TV is bad for your health. That's the clue for next week. Too much TV is bad for your health. Too much TV can be bad for your health. Either or. So that's your clue for next week's movies. In the meantime, like I said, Thursday, yeah, we're going there. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you have the time. It's a great help. And check in with us on Twitter and Instagram, where we are at ClashPod. Thank you for listening. Back on Thursday. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.